Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, Jesse Goldman, how are you, brother?
Doing great, Don. I appreciate you having me. Thank you for this and looking forward to talking shop with you.
No, you're actually one of the guys I wanted to, I've thought quite often, I said, I need to reach out to him and get him going. Yeah. But then I saw that you're restarting your podcast again. I thought, oh yeah, we'll come on and we'll talk about it. And Goalkeepers Union, right? We're both
right.
goalkeepers and got to support each other.
Yeah, no, exactly. You know, there's a lot of good goalkeeper coaches, great goalkeeper coaches that I've had had the pleasure to talk to, but also just other, you know, incredible guests as well, like Dan Abraham, Joe Lloyden, JP Della Camara, Doug Limoff. And I know I'm leaving out a handful, but I mean, I've been so fortunate just to pick some brains of some of the world's greatest coaches and leaders. So it's been a pleasure, and I'm excited to get back going with it and just seeing where the conversations go.
So for those that don't know who you are, how long have you been at Pitt? You were Pitt Women's Soccer.
Right.
How long have you been there now? Since 2021?
Fall 21 was my first season. So wrapping up my fifth full year. So next fall would be my sixth season. So born and raised in Pittsburgh, though. So it's been such a dream to work at the home university, and a university that I grew up 2 miles away from and right down the road, and wasn't quite smart enough to get in there academically, but you know, at least I have the pleasure to work there and try to help out some young minds.
Yeah, no, it is cool. I was also very fortunate to, I grew up in the Hayward, East Bay area, and then my first coaching gig was at Cal State East Bay. And it is cool to be able to be local and not have to pick up and move. It's
right.
Our jobs as coaches can be very transient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
it's been neat. It's been really unique just to be able to come back home. Cause you know, I went to college in New Jersey called Centenary University, a small Division III school. That's where I started coaching. So I coached there for 3 years, and, you know, so I got to at least spend some time away from Pittsburgh. And as us Yinzers will tell you, Pittsburgh always has a way of pulling you back into it. You know, it's got a nice big gravitational pull that can somehow find a way to pull you back.
I've never made it to Pittsburgh. My son went to school in Pennsylvania. He was in Loretto at St. Francis.
Okay.
With BJ Craig. But I never made it down south, down your way, but I have had players that have gone there, and everybody loves Pittsburgh.
It gets a bad rap, you know. We kind of get compared to Cleveland. So sorry for all my Cleveland folks out there, but you know, it's Cleveland's great. I'm just kidding. I do enjoy Cleveland, but Pittsburgh, I think, is really unique. You know, it come a gritty city, as I like to call it, having a nice steel foundation, but there's a lot to do. It's a great diverse group of people around here, and you know, we love Pittsburgh. Us Yinzers, we truly love the city. And you know, I think when people first come here, they are always pleasantly surprised.
All right. So what are the three rivers in the Three Rivers Stadium?
Allegheny, Ohio, Monongahela.
Yeah, you're a real Pittsburgh guy, no doubt about it.
I try to make sure I know, you know, I couldn't name all the 446 bridges in Pittsburgh, but I could tell you there are 446 of them.
That's great. That's great. So you'd mentioned your college experience back east at a small school. How'd that come about for you?
I honestly don't know. I don't know how it happened. I think I joined, you know, a random recruiting service of some sort, never like paid or anything, just kind of signed up, and somehow my name got to these guys. And so I actually didn't even decide I wanted to play college soccer until December of my senior year of high school. And then, you know, I never played club soccer either growing up. And then I kind of like realized, you know what, I don't want to give this up quite yet. So I reached out to a local club coach, and he started helping me through the process. So I just kind of started looking at a couple small Division III schools right outside Pittsburgh. And as well as the one in New Jersey and a couple of big Division I schools. I went on visits, talked to the coaches there, and it was never like a formal kind of walk-on offer. They're like, hey, you can come in the summer and potentially walk on if it's right. And I knew I wanted to play. So that I luckily again I didn't really decide. So I knew kind of what I wanted in mind, and Centenary came calling, and I don't know what it was about it, but it just kind of felt right. And it felt like I had the best opportunity to go and play there and kind of do something different because, I'm a kid from Pittsburgh growing up in the city, and then I go out to the suburbs of New Jersey in a place that, probably 99 out of 100 people have never heard of. And it worked out for me. It was one of the best 4 years and then 3 years as a staff member of my life. And I made some lifelong friends. And one of my coaches still today is somebody I talk to pretty weekly. He's a big mentor for me and just a big influence on my life. So it was really a unique experience. And I realized that I kind of like to thrive in those small family type atmospheres, and that's what Division III will give you.
Yeah, I know you were a volunteer assistant to get started, and I try to tell young coaches, and a lot of young coaches don't want to do it. It's the same way I got started, man. I thought maybe I wanted to dip my toes into the college coaching waters, so I went down to the local school and I said, "Do you need help? I can train goalkeepers." And they didn't have a goalkeeper coach, so that's how I got started. And even at Cal State East Bay was I think my pay was like $750 a year. So basically volunteer
Right, exactly.
assistant there for my first 4 or 5 years. But I tell young coaches, get your foot in the door. And if you're working harder and doing a better job than their paid assistants, and they can see your value, you're going to have an offer to come onto staff, or it will lead to another offer. And it's such a great way to get started. Did somebody advise you to do that, or?
No, I think I kind of just it's weird. Like, I just kind of had an inkling that it was the right move because here's what I love about being a volunteer. It's no pressure, right? There's really no pressure on you because you talk to any coach and they say, hey, yeah, come. What can you give me? Can you give me 2 hours? Great. Can you give me 6 hours? Great. Like, whatever you can give, they're gonna appreciate because it's volunteer. And so for me, it was at a point where I was actually just volunteering for the Northeastern men's soccer program the year before. Just wasn't quite enjoying Boston. I was working full time at a club and wasn't enjoying more so the club, and the club was paying my full time salary and wasn't enjoying the full time club role that it was taken away from the college. So I just again wanted to stay in the college game. So when I kind of the Pitt thing came open, I was like, this is a no brainer for me, and it's a really no pressure way for me to just get in a Power Four program or Power Five program at the time as well. And I'm like, this is really cool. I get to be in a Power Five program. If I hate it, I hate it. There's no skin off my back except maybe a couple months of work, and it's a lesson learned. So I don't even know how to explain it. I just knew I wanted to stay in college coaching and volunteering at the time, because now they kind of banned the volunteer coach in the NCAA. But at the time it was just an easy way to get your foot in the door at a low pressure environment and basically just give it how what I could give it. And then it turned into, something obviously much more now being in a full-time role. But I don't think I think a lot of times if you can make it work, of course, and obviously you have to do club stuff, private sessions on the side to supplement your income and do all that. And it's definitely a grind, but that's kind of what we do as coaches, and it was enjoyable. 2023, when I was first hired by Pitt, that was my first full-time paying college job. It was
Was
about
it?
it was what like 7 years into my college coaching career. I was always either like stipend as a part-time assistant, volunteer at other places, just always, but it also allowed me to, and this is I think is really unique too, is because I was either a volunteer or paid stipend, I had to do other things to make money. So I was a waiter at a time. I was working as a sports performance coach. I did, I was at my college's SID for a couple months, and that didn't work out. But it at least I worked for a startup. It at least allowed me to kind of dip my toe into all these other avenues of working to see what I really enjoyed. And finally, once I got to Pitt, and after really my first fall at Pitt, it allowed me to solidify and say, okay, you know what? I'm going full time with this, all in on this coaching thing, and going to make a career out of it. But it took, I guess, 6 years of exploring post college to really figure out and hone in that I wanted to do it. And that's why I appreciate the volunteer stuff, because it allowed me to work in a low pressure environment to figure things out for me.
And you came in, of course, under Randy when he was the head coach there, Randy Waldrum. And so what was that like when he was having to coach the national team? So he was having to take off and go do national team duties. I know you and Ben and the rest of the staff had to step up big time, right, to help him out.
At the time, it was Dustin Stein, who's now at Oklahoma State, and then Ashton Gordon as well, who was around, who was a former player for us. And once she graduated, she started coaching, so she was there to help fill a role as well. And I think it was luckily Ben and Randy kind of speak the same language. It was pretty much smooth sailing, even when Randy did have to leave, just because Ben was able to just maintain the ship and keep it going. And I tried to just fill in the holes wherever I could see fit, and fill a gap when needed. So I was always trying to do the little things that maybe people don't see, but knew that I had to do it. And I think that's my favorite part about being an assistant, is just trying to be the glue guy and plugging in holes when you need to be plugged in, to allow Ben and Randy to do what they do best. And that's the X's and O's and coach, man. And it's such a pleasure being able to have a front row seat to watch them coach and work their magic with the players on the field. And for me, I kind of recognized pretty quickly that they're so good at that let me try to take care of all the other things to allow them to kind of excel in that area and not have to think about all the other things that go on in a college program. So that's what it was like as kind of Randy gone. But it was just, it's a team, right? You're a team, and you just try to pick up where pieces are left off, and pick up for people if they have to miss for whatever reason.
I imagine it's been a fairly smooth transition then, having Ben take over the program from Randy.
Because they were always, it was really not like nothing's changed to in a way. Randy and Ben are, they're still kind of leading the program. Ben's obviously just kind of making more of the final decisions. But yeah, it was smooth sailing.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one for a lot of us to watch and see happening. And you could kind of see, I think I could at least kind of see where it was going before it happened, because you could just see, as we get older as coaches, I mean, different opportunities come about in life as we meet other people and see other things. And then, of course, Randy's still involved, but just his role has changed in it. The girls probably didn't miss much of a beat, right?
No, not really. And the way we frame it too is just the way college sports are going, as you're familiar with. It's almost turning into pro sports, and I think it's slowly, the trickle down effect is from football, basketball to women's soccer and men's soccer.
Sure.
It's starting to get more real, and so I think we just kind of wanted to make it a little bit more of a pro style approach, just because, I think now too, it's with the growth of the women's game and the NWSL, and it's so great to see. You're starting to, I think, see a lot more of these youth athletes wanting to go play professionally. And obviously there's a handful of the younger kids skipping college already and going pro, which is incredible. So I think, as more kids start to see that, and that route becomes a little bit more accessible, we wanted to make it that way for our kids. We've been lucky enough to work with some really high level athletes, and I think we've sent, a little bit over 15 players to pros over the last couple of seasons. And in 24 and 25, we sent two girls to the NWSL in each season, or 23 and 24 in each season, and two of them actually played each other in last year's final, and Sarah Szczepanski and Deb Bebby have done. So we just kind of realized that the way college sports are going, and the way a lot of our kids are talking, it's turning into pro sports to a degree. And so we just wanted to make that shift to where now Randy, who's, the GOAT in my opinion, he's one of the greatest of all time. He understands the game better than most people, so he's able to oversee a lot of that pro style approach within our program. And then Ben can kind of do the X's and O's and all that stuff. And I'm lucky enough to work with a great group of goalkeepers every day. So it's really unique, I think, where college sports are going. But it's scary in a way, but it's also interesting and fascinating. And I personally am excited to see what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's scary for those that have we look, we all get used to this is how it's done and this is the way it's done and this is how you do it. And I think that what's going on at Pitt and I think what's starting to happen slowly at some other at least Power Four institutions, making the change is not a bad thing. It's keeping up with the way that the college sports are going. in general, and I know a lot don't like it, but you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to you're going to fight the way that it is and the way that it's moving, or are you going to adjust and adapt along with it to survive? And I think in that sense, it's probably a good thing what's going on.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to like the volunteer position in me. It's like to me, I see this as an opportunity. Like, can we be the first program to kind of change the direction of all the complaints about the NIL, the transfer portal, and all? And quite frankly, I think you can start to use it in your favor if you just reframe your mentality, and instead of complaining about all this and that, and just, you know, it is what it is. It's just the new era. It's kind of like, you know, with the NBA, it's, you know, all the 80s and 90s, people are going to say Jordan's better. A lot of us millennials are going to say LeBron. It's a different era of basketball. We can appreciate both sides to it. And we just have to accept what's here now. And that's all we can really focus on is the present, and trying to work with what we have, and make the most of, hey, how can we just impact these kids' lives every day without that all the external stuff and worrying about what's going to happen with college football and college basketball and all that money stuff, and just let's focus on the kids that we have here and develop them to be the best people and players that they can be. And, you know, not forget the bigger picture of, hey, if your kid wants to go play professionally, can we help develop them to be ready to go play pro? And if they don't want to go play professionally, can we just help them develop and get a great 4-year degree, which Pitt can offer, and, you know, prepare them for the workforce and to take all their everything they learned from being a college athlete and to be the best employee they can be, or best CEO, what have you.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And for anybody listening that thinks that, you know, this is the end of the changes, there's a lot more changes that are going to come in the next 5 years. I can guarantee it. The men's game is talking about at the top of the ladder, talking about, you know, a 10-month professional season, and at least to guys like G, I talked to G about this, and you know, he was on the rules committee. The women's side isn't really
Not
interested
yet.
in the 10-month season like the men's side is, and isn't interested in, you know, trying to get an NPSL light, you know, professional group going like the men's side's talking about joining with the UPSL or some sort of the USL, and you know, and trying to be truly professional but still be in college at the same time in the professional leagues. And it's as we see these changes, you know, there may be a split between what the top men's teams are doing and what the top women's teams are doing, and that may or may not have a trickle-down effect into, you know, into the mid-majors and into Division II and Division III. You know, there's a lot of unknowns yet. There's a lot of lawsuits still out there.
Probably more to come.
So we're not even close to being done with the lawsuits. It's numbering in the thousands now of lawsuits that are working their way through the court system.
That's right.
And so more changes will happen.
You know, it's we talk about it all the time in the office how we're big advocates for the 21st century model and the 2 semester model. It just, to us, it makes the most sense of playing 8 games in each semester, having a week of training. Because listen, for me, I love the training, right? I love that. That's why I love it. Oddly enough, this is why I love the spring season as well, because you train all the time. So there's a ton of room for development. But the problem with that is that you only play 5 games. So it's like, imagine you're studying, you study for a whole semester just to take one final, and then you're expected to remember everything you learned in week one by, you know, week 12. That, to me, that's really difficult. But if you spread it out over, you know, however many weeks, but you play 8 games, you can train every day for a week, and then on the game day you can actually implement what you've been talking about. Kids can relax a little bit more with their study, knowing that they're not playing Thursday, Friday, and oh, you know, you wake up on Monday, your off day Monday, and then Tuesday you got to kind of switch your mind back around for a game on Thursday, and then you got a final or you got a test on Thursday, right? There's just so much going on, and I'm glad that they're starting to extend the season a little bit to avoid kind of less 2-game weekends. But I mean, to me, it just makes the most sense to have 1 game a weekend, 4 consistent and solid days of training. And that way and the other thing is too, it's, you know, if we want to prepare kids to go play professionally, we can't really do that in a 3-month season when the NWSL is a 10-month season, or the pro or whatever, or wherever you go, it's a 10-month season. And so to me, that's illogical, right? We're cramming everything in 3 months and then asking them to go, hey, yep, now you got to go play in 10-month season. And to me, you know, I'm not gonna act like I know what that's like. I never played professionally, but can only imagine when you're used to going 3 months and cramming it all in to having to mentally prepare yourself for 10 months. I mean, that can be mentally draining and physically challenging. And I don't know if that's the best way to help prepare our kids for the next level, if that's what we want to do. Obviously, if you know, teach their own, but for us, that's my thought because that's what we want to do. You know, 90% of our kids want to go play professionally, and it's hard for us to almost prepare them if everything is just folks so crammed into a 3 month season.
So that's definitely the, Sasha's argument and the 21st century model folks. That's their argument. It's just it's this split mentality that we have between, some schools are going to want it and some schools aren't, and what does that mean for schools way up north, right? What's it mean for Syracuse, right? When you if you're involved in this and now it's January and you're buried under sick, like a storm that we just got, right? How do you play? Well, I guess you get on a plane and you go to Florida. And what does that mean? You spend 6 weeks in Florida a year. It means you take your classes online. Means, it just means thinking of things differently. So there's logistics and costs that are associated with those logistics that would have to be worked out,
It's definitely
that
not as easy
people
as
haven't
I'm,
really worked out yet.
it's definitely not as easy I'm kind of making it out to be, but I, you know, I can rebuttal with this too, is our baseball and softball teams, they start in February. Where do they go for the first 6 weeks of the season? They're going down to Florida and playing, you know,
Fair
hard
enough.
down
Yeah,
there, right? So
fair
it's like
enough.
baseball and softball
Yeah.
have been doing that for forever. So it's, you know, it's what's the difference in us going to play Boston College down in, you know, Lakewood Ranch around an ECNL event or something like that, you know?
Yeah, fair
Right. So
enough.
it's,
Right.
I, there are obviously a lot of workarounds. I'm not going to sit here and act like I have all the answers, but I
Right.
just, I always just try to at least put the student athlete in what their priority should be at the forefront. And hopefully, you know, our administrations can, and the NCAA leadership can try to figure that out on their end to make it work logistically. But yeah, I know there's a lot more that I don't know, and a lot of conversations I'm not in as to why it couldn't work. But I think it'd be pretty cool to see.
It's a good discuss. It's a fun discussion to
It
have,
is. It is.
certainly, and I think it's a valuable discussion to at least have. It doesn't hurt to talk about it and to see if it's feasible. And I, it certainly doesn't work for everybody. I mean, there are schools, at least out west in California, and I know in the Midwest, and we talk about, Akron's name comes up quite every year about, they're struggling financially, and they're talking about real folding them into Wright State and things like that. So schools that are struggling financially already, it's really hard to justify the added cost
For sure,
of an
for sure.
extended season and, spending money, possibly,
Right.
down south and stuff. So it doesn't work for every school.
For
But
sure.
honestly, I think personally, I think that the way the system has been going with the, revenue sharing money and the NIL money, and look, it's clear if you as you're watching the March Madness, that the rich are getting richer, and we aren't seeing the upsets like we used to see, and I, that's not going to slow down, and Pitt's in that situation, and that the Dukes of the world, the Notre Dames of the world, and the we can go on and on, the Penn States of the world, the schools that do have really good revenue coming in from football and from basketball, and they have more money to spend, the system's definitely helping them be able to buy better players, get better players, and it's going to push them farther to the top. So I think at some point to see a complete separation of those schools into their own something, right? Takes the mid-majors that they're struggling and the bottom of the D1 schools that have always struggled. It allows them to have more of an evil level playing field, literally, because if you're out west here, I don't want to name schools, but we've got some schools that are really struggling, and it's clearly, that the field is slanted and they have to always kick the ball uphill, and it's really hard to play the schools that are always kicking the ball downhill.
You know what I
And you're
would love?
never going to catch them, ever.
You ready to know my fantasy world of college sports? And I don't
Sure.
know if we could call this college sports anymore, because I think it'd be more like pro sports. Just like basically Because I think we like with all this revenue generating stuff and all the NIL, it's just become a madhouse of who gets what. And to me, I'm just like, what if we just split off each sport? Like if you have your Pitt Athletics, and then each sport became its own kind of subsidiary of Pitt Athletics, and you gave them a budget of however many dollars, and you put in charge a quote unquote general manager, and you said, hey, here's your budget. You can hire, and in this way too, it's like you can hire your support staff as needed. You can hire your social media people, and you can hire however many people you want, pay your players out of that budget too. And then whatever you can make off sponsorship, ticket sales, XYZ, that's yours to keep. And then you have that next year, and then you're growing it like a business. That's my fantasy world. I don't know any way that could
Interesting.
happen. But to me, I'm just like, because everyone's arguing over who gets what, it's unfair. It's just not really a level playing field. But if you could somehow say, hey, each team is starting with this amount of money. Everyone's on a level playing field. Go from there. Schedule whoever you want. Keep it in your budget. Go on, go, and go. And I don't know if you can make your money back there. And it's that'd be the tricky challenge of it all. And I'm sure there'd be a lot of Title IX problems as well with it that I haven't really thought through. But that would be my kind of fantasy world of college athletics, is every sport just kind of does its own thing under one big university umbrella.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, and if look, title, from what I understand of Title IX, it really only comes involved if you're receiving, federal money.
Okay.
And so I don't know, is there some way to separate out, well, we're not going to use the federal money for the sports. We can use, generated money for the sports. Therefore, maybe it doesn't come under I don't know. Lawyers
Yeah.
could probably argue
Right,
that in
right.
court. And probably will be
Yeah,
arguing that in
exactly.
court if it comes down to something like that. But it's an interesting thought for
Yeah.
sure.
I just it, it's tough, right? It's hard to, and I don't know. It's just like it's interesting because you have all these NIL donors, and at some point, I think all these guys are going to get pretty pissed off when they pay $3 million to help get a quarterback just for him to leave and go get $8 million at the next school. How often can you keep coming back to the same well of all this money? And at some point, these guys are going to start getting pissed off that they're paying all this money just for these kids to leave, or even not have a good season and then leave. And it's just a wild time in college sports, but it is fascinating just to watch it unfold.
Yeah, I don't know if it's happened yet, but there has been talk about, and I'm waiting for the first lawsuits about the NIL cooperatives suing the athletes to get their money back because the athlete didn't stay, and it's, of course they're talking about contracts of, truly making these athletes employees, which I am not I don't think that's in the best interest of the athlete. I mean, if they're an employee, now you can put demands on them like you can put on employees, and I'm not sure that's in the best interest of the athlete. So I don't know what the ultimate answer is, but I do know we're not done with this discussion yet.
No, it's yeah, I don't know. I'm going to let those NCAA leaders and administrators figure that out for themselves, because I don't think there's a right answer. I think whatever they decide, people are going to hate, and people aren't going to like, and it's just going to be as it is what it is. And hopefully it doesn't affect other Olympic sports that badly. And we can still get a good experience from it.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, and the bottom line is, Jesse, that when we talk about NIL money and revenue sharing money, we are talking about a very small percentage of colleges that this even affects. It doesn't affect any of the Division III schools, which is the largest number of NCAA schools in the country fall under the Division III level. It's certainly not going to affect Division II schools. It's not going to affect NAIA schools. It's not going to affect junior colleges. And frankly, it doesn't affect the 90% of the Division I schools even. We're talking about the top 10% of the Division I schools, the top 30, 40, 50 schools in the country. And that's all we're talking about. And everybody talks about like it's every school, and it's not. And when it comes to recruiting, it's one of the things that we have to educate our families on, is that look, what you're hearing out there about how recruiting is done and the money that's available and how the money's being allocated, and even to some extent the 28 person, roster caps. It's not every school, not every division and not every school, and even not every Division I school is run like we're seeing people talk about in the news or on social media.
Yeah, it's just recruiting's like it's changed. Everything is changing, right? But again, I think it's just a matter, again, like you said, just educating your families, the parents, the kids on what's going on and really how to navigate these waters, because there's going to be a lot of things, again, like you said, that you see out there, and doesn't necessarily mean that it's affecting positively or negatively anybody in the women's soccer game, but it's just you just got to educate them just so there's an awareness. And also it's up to the parents and the kids too to ask the coaches kind of what their situation is. And even if you are curious, I'm sure from what I've heard is NIL right now, it hasn't really creeped into to women's soccer yet. There are some programs that have a little bit, but it's nothing really that magnifying like you see in other sports, like even like other women's sports like softball or volleyball. It's still not quite there yet. Obviously, I kind of wish it will be. I'd be curious to see if it does get there and what'll happen if it does, and who's going to be the first program that really heavily invests in women's soccer, and does it succeed or doesn't it? And I don't know. I don't know.
There's one P4 out there that has at least three $100,000 players on their team, but those, man, those are rare. Those are rare. I was talking last year, talking to another Power Four coach, and he said the one change, and he's an old school guy. I mean, he's been around a long time and won multiple national championships, and he said it's really bizarre for him that. For many recruits, the first two questions that he's getting is, how much money will you give me and how much playing time will you guarantee me? And he said it never used to, well, never, of course, we didn't talk about money, but nobody was mentioning guaranteeing playing time because everybody seemed to have understood it at one point that, that was not a guarantee. I have to earn it. But these days, for the top athletes,
See,
apparently that's how
for
it's
me,
going.
if you're a top athlete, though, you're not even asking how much playing time am I guaranteed. That's not the mindset of a top athlete to me. So if I'd hope I get that question, I'd respectfully say, yeah, we're going to go in a different direction, because that's not, you want something
I
that's
would
guaranteed.
say this, oh,
You're
100%. I would
not
say
cut
the
out for
same thing,
this. Like,
100%.
yeah. And so be it. And hopefully they can go steal some money from another, from one of our competitors, and
Right.
get the guarantee there and see what happens there. But yeah, we luckily we've never had those first two questions asked. I think for us, and I'd be curious to see how it changes coming up on this June 15th. But in the past, it's never, we've had the question of is there NIL money, and but it was kind of towards the end, just more so parents and curiosity of kind of what our state or current state is. And so it's, but it's never been like, hey, I need $20,000 if you want me to come to Pitt. And
Right.
but again too, it's, do we really want those kids? Because you want kids to come to Pitt for, because they love you as a coaching staff and they love the university and they believe in you guys, right? If they're going there for money, if you make decisions based off money, you're not gonna enjoy it either way, and then you're just kind of then you're just kind of screwed
Right.
over our coaching staff with expecting you to be there for a couple of years. But to each their own again. And I don't know. I'm curious to see if this June 15th we do get those questions early on now, based off what has been heard by other parents and other club coaches with their players and how much they're getting and all that fun stuff.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it'll continue to evolve. One of the things I wanted to talk about, because I know I've got some young coaches that listen to the podcast and they talk about, how to get what life is like for an assistant coach in college soccer. So I know for me it was, I literally had eight jobs to try to pay all of the bills because the assistant coach didn't pay that much. And I know that you're in a little better position than many assistants are in the country. I mean, I've got buddies that are on, 10, 12,000 a year or less as an assistant coach, and they're quote unquote full time. They just don't make much. So they've got to have other jobs. So, what are some of the ways that you've been able to supplement your income and help maybe think about what your future looks like at the same time be able to give, the energies that Pitt requires
Yeah,
of
it's a lot. And luckily, again, I've kind of been used to doing that since even when I was playing in college. I was working Friday nights at the local restaurant as a waiter and just trying to earn some extra money. I was working as a sport. I started working as a sports performance coach my senior year. So luckily, I've been used to kind of working job after job after job to make money. But yeah, it's you really have to enjoy what you're doing. I think after my first fall season, I started as the goalkeeping director at Beedling, which is a girls academy club right outside Pittsburgh. So, doing that again is kind of like another full-time job because you go from Pitt to Beedling a couple of nights a week. And I stepped down this past year because I felt like I was in a good place to be able to step down. But doing a lot of private sessions, trying to pick up, camps and coaching clinics here and there just to fill in and make a few hundred bucks. But yeah, there's a lot you're gonna have to do, and I'm also part owner in Set GK, which is a goalkeeper brand that helps fund me a little bit as well. And so I'm just it's always just about finding really the right people that you want to work with as well. That because you're gonna be stressed out, you're gonna be tired. So if you're running to other jobs and you hate the people or you don't enjoy the people, you're gonna really stress yourself out and burn yourself out from coaching. And you'll probably start to feel a little bit more jaded from to even want to get back into coaching. So for me, it's if you're gonna do those extra things, make sure you have people around you that are valuing you and treating you properly and making sure that they understand you, because I think that's gonna keep you going throughout.
No, that's absolutely true. Tell us about the camps that you've got going and your clinics that you do.
Yeah, so been doing like a trying to do a kind of spring goalkeeper clinics at Pitt every now and again, just to really reach out to the youth. And because listen, having been in the club scene and being a goalkeeper coach yourself and probably doing it at the club, a lot of clubs will give the goalkeeper coaches about 6 yards of space and have 14 goalkeepers there. And they're
Right.
all when I was at Beedling, it just is what it is, and I made it work. And luckily, it was a great group of kids. But I would have, 08 MLS Next down to 2012 GA, and every age group in between. And it's 14 kids, and I maybe 20 to 30 yards of length, and like 15 yards of width. And it's unfortunate because it hurts the kids, right? It's not even about my pride or ego. Like, oh, I need an 18. It's just like this isn't fair for the kids to get one goalkeeper coach for 12 kids and all different ages when they all need different things. So I'm really just trying to provide an outlet of more space and more coaching with, a little bit low pressure environment. You're not being forced to, then, this coach isn't calling his goalkeeper back 30 minutes in, and that coach isn't calling his goalkeeper back 20 minutes in, right? It's just a little bit more trying to provide a little bit more steady goalkeeping training. And if they're looking for that extra little supplemental training, that's really about it. And then with Set GK, we do offer a lot of great goalkeeping camps like Set X, which is a really cool pro experience camp. That's down in Panama City Beach, Florida. And we have a lot of sponsored pros like John McCarthy and a couple other USL guys like Alex Sutton. And we integrate the kids with the pros. So you get to watch the pros train. You get to train with them, like Ethan Bandre, who's down in Tampa, I believe, right now, or Loudoun right now, sorry. And it's just, to me, it's I was watching these kids train with professional goalkeeper, and I'm thinking, man, I just got to watch these guys train, and then I get to work with them exactly what they just trained. And I get to like, and so that to me is like what I'm really ha most happy about and really love to see, because we just did it. It was our first year last winter, and it's coming up this next winter. And it's just one of the coolest experiences ever. We'll do kind of a little film review for these kids as well, because again, goalkeepers, you probably don't get the proper film review that you need at the club level. And that's just, it's tough, right? It's tough when the clubs don't really provide that for you. So again, we're trying to be an all-encompassing goalkeeping experience, and that to me is probably the coolest camp I've ever been around.
And we'll have a link to that. You're gonna you give me a link, and we'll have a link to that in our episode bio description. And it's yeah, that does sound unique. I like that idea.
Yeah, it's because I think too, another underrated form of training is just watching pros train and watching how they do things, how they move.
Absolutely.
And I think we kind of forget that you can learn a ton by just taking a step back and watching and trying to pick up on little things and observing. And Instead of just doing and doing and doing and being told what to do, right? You just take a step back and allow you to say and kind of mirror that image. So I think that's a really unique opportunity. And I mean, for me, like it was really my first integration into training a ton of, USL, MLS guys. And for me, it was a cool experience just to watch how they train and the habits that they do before training, after training, how they warm up, how they mentally prepare. I mean, it's really a fact, and you're just immersed in it. It's so fascinating. It's so beyond cool. It's wild.
Yeah, that sounds great. Walk us through a typical season at Pitt. Just kind of glance through it. So when do the women report, first of all?
Yeah, so we'll report at the end of June this summer, and typically that's what we always do. We can't really make it mandatory, but it's highly recommended because you can't work with us, but you're allowed to work with our strength and conditioning coach. So with us, typically you would have about 6 weeks to prepare for the fall season. So you'll condition, you'll play. It's kind of captain's practices like, but it's just a lot of playing, a lot of conditioning. But at least that way, once August 1st rolled around, we step in and say, okay, we got 5 days to prepare for our first exhibition match. So then we're going into our first day of training, game model teaching, trying to prepare the kids for the exhibition game and beyond. But now with this year, we'll be able to work with them a little bit sooner. In mid-July, they're starting that kind of transition period, I think is what they're calling it, and it's going to be about 2 weeks of an 8 hour period. But at least this way, we can now work with the kids for 2 weeks for 8 hours a week leading up to the season. So they'll be here at the end of June, again, starting to build that fitness. And then once July 15th rolls around, we'll start training 8 hours a week with them. And then August 1st is when we get to start kind of full going to 20-hour weeks. And I think that should hopefully limit some of the injuries of and all the stressors of preparing of or that 10-day preseason that some schools normally get.
And I think it's the women's side only that has given that transition period. I don't think the men's side's done that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not sure what the men are doing actually. So yeah.
Yeah, people don't understand that. That there's a women's rules committee and then there's a men's rules committee. And so we do have different rules. I mean, the men don't have the dead period in the winter that the women have at all. So there are different rules about that. So that's the other thing that I don't think a lot of prospects understand is how fast they have to hit the ground running at the collegiate level. That games, you don't get, 3, 4 weeks to settle in and get comfortable, but matches start right away, like you said, first 5 days.
And it's so hard to, I mean, no matter what you do, seemingly as a high school senior entering your freshman year, there's never going to be an intensity that simulates what you're doing in the running. Like there's nothing like it. And so it's to have that transition period is going to be huge for a lot of the schools who can't bring their kids in early at the end of June period. And who bring them in August 1st, it'll be huge. Just that 2 weeks will allow you to at least be able to integrate a little bit more properly and hopefully kind of start to build some of that stamina and fitness and intensity and understand what it's really like. But this is also why we try to encourage a lot of our commits to come in a semester early, and just because you get 3 months of training with the team. And that if you come, a semester early, and that way you're already integrated, and you're going to be sore, it's going to be probably a very hard 3 months, but at least this way you understand, you get to meet some of the girls, you understand what it's like, you get used to all your classes. And then by the fall season, oh, this is nothing for me. I just had 3 months of this. I'm ready to go, because you know what it's like. So that's another thing that I think a lot of PSA should start doing, is just enrolling early, because I think it gives you a huge benefit. And look, you also, and this is how we sell it to kids too. We finish very early, so our semester is done at the end of April. You're back home for May, so you get to go to prom, graduation, get the last month of senior year, and still kind of get the best of both worlds, because you're integrated with the college team, and now you get your high school life back for another month.
That's become a thing. It wasn't, didn't used to be a thing, but that has become a more common thing that coaches are trying to ask players to do. And a lot of players are ahead of schedule. Maybe they've taken some junior college classes already. They've already got enough units. They've got enough AP units, that they're able to graduate early.
And it's that you got to coordinate that with your guidance counselor and then your academic advisor at college. But it's a huge help. I mean, we love when our incoming kids do that because it's you get to know them as well, and it kind of takes the stress off them as well, because a lot of things that we hear from a lot of these kids after the spring is, oh, I just wasn't so confident. And it's and I you know I
Right.
don't blame them. It's so hard to step into a new environment at maybe 17 years old, and you want to prove yourself, but maybe those first couple of days don't go as well as you thought, and it's tough to kind of build that back up. So at least in that time period, you can kind of go through those ebbs and flows of a college season, and it's not happening right in the fall with, okay, well, I didn't play in those first two games, and now your confidence is shot in the fall, and then it kind of spirals down for the rest of the season, and then you look
That's
back on
exactly what
it,
happens, huh?
right? And you're
That's
just like, oh, I
exactly what
wish my
happens.
freshman year, So, if you
Yeah.
make it work, I think it's very beneficial to do as a high school senior going into your next program.
So these, yeah, let's stay right there for a second. So, a very common scenario is that by the time you start to feel like you're getting your foot on the ground, your feet on the ground as a freshman, you're into league season. And so if you haven't proven yourself and that you can immediately impact the team, you may not get all of those opportunities your freshman year and in the fall, and you may have to wait for the spring, get those seniors out, get them graduated. Now you'll get more opportunities in the spring.
And think
But
about
what we're
this.
seeing is quite a few of the, maybe it's not, I don't know, maybe it's not affecting you guys as much, but it's a very common thing for the players to go, hey, I didn't get to play my freshman year, so I'm going to transfer. Instead of sticking it, out, instead of saying, because I try to get these kids to stay at least through their sophomore year. Don't judge your success based on those 3 months or 5 months of your first semester of college. It's not fair to you. I
No,
think you should be
100%.
involved.
And think about it like this too. It's, let's say first, right before the first game of the season, you pick up a bad ankle injury in practice or something, or you kind of sprain your knee and you're out for 4 weeks. That's all of non-conference season. And now you're getting into conference play and the ACC. If you're an unproven freshman and all we've really seen you in practice, it's going to be really hard for us as a coaching staff to say, oh, okay, her first game back, is she ready to go up and play against Cal and Stanford in one of her first college games? And that's a big ask of our coaching staff to you too, because we want to be able to put you in positions to succeed. And if you're sitting there for 4 weeks watching eight games go by, and we don't really know anything about you as a player and how you're going to handle these situations, it becomes really hard, it for both sides. And so it's, again, that goes back to our two semester model. Why, okay, if you miss 4 weeks, well, you only miss four games, but yeah, I mean, something like that can just change an entire course of somebody's playing career. And maybe they were actually ready for that Power Four level, but because they got hurt and everything's so crammed in, and you miss eight all of non-conference play, coaches can't really see you in the right moments.
Yeah, it's funny. I hear a lot of, I have this discussion with a lot of players, not just our clients, but I think we talk more kids out of transferring. Even though we can make a business of it, we talk them out of transferring. We try to explain to them from a college coach's perspective, look, this is likely where your college coach is coming from. But it's shocking to me, Jesse, how many kids don't even have an honest conversation with their coaches before they walk in and tell their coaches that they want to transfer. And once you open your mouth and you say, I want to transfer to a coach, a lot of coaches aren't going to try to talk you out of it. And it's like, how much time do I spend trying to talk you out of thoughts that you're already having or you've already made up your mind? How much time am I going to spend trying to talk you out of it? And I always think it's important for players, and I want to hear what you think about maybe some of the best strategies for players. But when players walk in for their end of the season meeting, if you can keep your mentality towards what does the team need and how can I help the team instead of what can you do for me, coach? I need to play more. I want to play more, because I know a lot of coaching friends of mine that'll go, well, if you're looking for a guarantee to play a lot next season, maybe it is better that you transfer.
Right.
So
And that
mentally, what can players do from all the team meetings that you've sat in over the years and all of the ones that you've seen go well for players and seen them, shift into starters as opposed to it just goes straight downhill and it is time to transfer. How can players prepare themselves mentally and how can they approach a coaching staff when it comes to an end of the season meeting, assuming the season didn't go like they dreamed?
Right. Yeah. This is always a tricky one because I think it starts with having a really honest assessment about you and your abilities and really trying to figure out what you want. And there's nothing wrong with what you want as an individual, right? Like, again, I played Division III. I wanted to go play for 4 years. That's what I did. That's what I wanted. And, it's like if we won our conference, I guarantee you when we won our conference, it felt no different than when Florida State won the ACC, right? Like,
Right.
that feeling for me probably felt it felt the same for those girls. Like, so
Sure, it does.
it's just about figuring out what you want. And if you want to continue to battle and play at the highest level, then go to Power Four and understand that, hey, you might not, this might not work out for you like you wanted, but there's a lot of respect that you're going to earn and say, you know what, I'm going to keep grinding this out, grind it out. And I understand that I might quote unquote fail. And if failing's not playing for significant minutes, then at least you gave it your all, right? But you have to give
Right.
it your all, and that means you're gonna have to do extra. Like, you have to really give it your all. If after 1 year it didn't go as you planned, then you're going to have to do something a little bit extra if you want it to go as planned. Because and again, here's how we describe it with players. It's, if you're here and you didn't play your freshman year and the starter's here and you want to be the starter, but if every day in training you're doing the same thing as the starter, then that doesn't move the needle. But if every day you're starting to do 15 minutes and the starter's not doing 15 and you kind of continue to stack it, then it'll start to work out for you. But you really have to, give it your all and be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, I did a little bit extra today that's going to help me start and play significant minutes. And there, it takes a lot of work, right? It's very easy said, but it's very hardly done. And if you don't want to do that, that's perfectly fine. Like, you can go to a mid-major or a lower Division I or a lower D2 and go be a star. Like, there's a lot of merit to that. Like, go be a star at Division II. Like, that's awesome. If you want that and you want to go play 90 minutes, be an all-conference player and want to experience what that feels like to be the star of a team, that's perfectly okay. Like, I think that's awesome too, because you're doing what you know is best for you. But I think it just takes a lot of honest self-assessment to figure out where you're at and where you want to go with your college career. Because you only get 4 years, right? You only get 4 or 5 or 5 years in some cases, right? But it goes by extremely quickly. We have our seniors this year. We're just like, hey, like, yeah, you're a senior now. It's like, I like freshman year is just like that. And 2023 was just like that, right? So it goes by so much quicker than you think. So it's just, don't waste the years if you want to stay at a high level, which I think is awesome. And I think you should always try to stick it out, but you got to at least put the work in and be honest that you are putting that work in. You're doing a little bit extra that's the people in front of you are doing. And again, talking with your coach, it's going to be like, hey, what can I do to get better? And then start to, and this is why I love doing IDPs with players, because it's, hey, it's, what's your goal? And, we have a kid came in, a freshman came in and said, hey, I want to be an all conference player next year. And I said, great. That's awesome. How can we get there? And let's start building. What can we do every day? Well, okay, if I need to get better in the air, then okay, yep, set up a mannequin, get a partner just to go throw you head balls and jump over the mannequin and get work at those snap headers. Okay, if I want to work on my 1v1 defending, okay, get the best forward on the team and say, hey, you're going to dribble
Right.
at me 10 times after practice, and I'm just going to defend you. And again, so it's just about kind of figuring out what really works for you and what's sustainable and what will make you happy. Because again, we want you to be happy. Like, that's what every coach wants from their players, I hope. We want the players to be happy. So it's going to be up to them. And our coach and my job as a coach is just to support you in that goal. And if that goal is for, hey, I'm going to be happy playing at a lower Division I school and playing more minutes, hey, let me get on the phone for you and call up the coach and give you a great recommendation. Or hey, if I want to beat out this starter next year after not playing, then hey, okay, what can I help you with, individually to help you get there? And so I think it just takes a lot of, it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of hard, honest conversations with yourself. But that's part of growth and that's part of maturity. And that's what you should get at your college experience.
I love it. People, the fans of the podcast know one of my favorite quotes is from Shakespeare, and he said, "Know thyself." which is what you describe. You really have to know what you want. I had a podcast I did a few weeks ago, about a couple months ago now, with a player that I helped called named Tallulah Miller. She says, I want to play at a big time level. That's where I want to play. And so she went to, I hooked her up with Kentucky in the
Okay.
SEC, right? And end of the freshman year, it didn't go well. Should I transfer? And I said, well, you said you wanted to play at this level. And like you said, I can guarantee you that there are at least 1,000 schools in this country that would take you tomorrow because you're a fantastic goalkeeper. And you can go be a big fish in a small pond. But that's not what you said you wanted. Did your goals change? Right? And she decided her goals didn't change. And so she was going to stay. And then all of a sudden the next year, she's a starter, you know? And I don't think enough, I think it disturbs me that a fair chunk of the kids in the transfer portal didn't give themselves a fair shake, you know, didn't stick it out long enough to find out if they could really make it at that level. Now, fair enough. I love your point. It's okay to change your mind and say, wow, what a commitment it is to play in the ACC or the SEC or the Big Ten or the Big 12. This isn't what I wanted. It's not what I thought it was going to be. I do want to step down, and I know a good chunk of Division I players that have stepped down to a Division III or Division II and then found happiness there because it's not what I think. It's okay to say, I've changed my mind. This
It
isn't
100%.
what I want.
100%. Well, and the other thing you have to think about too, especially at our Power Four schools, is the nature of the beast is we're going to try to out recruit every class because we need to get better, right? For us,
Right.
it's like we recruit against Notre Dame, Florida State, Duke, Carolina, I mean, Virginia, who am I like that, and that's just five schools, right? Stanford now, Cal. It's like we recruit against all the best schools in the country. And I love that, right? I love that challenge. And that doesn't even include all the top schools in the SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. And you know, it's we're recruiting the same players, but we're always trying to out recruit us because that's how you get better as a program. And if you're not okay as a player to say, hey, I'm okay with them trying to out recruit me, I actually welcome that challenge to great, I want them to try to out recruit me and I'm just going to get better because it's going to make me better. Then to me, that's the mindset you need to have. You need to love that challenge and love that pressure to say, hey, I know coach, if I don't perform, a coach is going to try to bring somebody in and I'm going to say good and I'm going to continue to work hard. And it's tough. And sometimes again, you might give it your all and it just might not work out. And that's sports though. It's, you know, sometimes you lose a game on one shot on goal. And that's just the way the ball bounces sometimes. And it doesn't mean you're a failure. It doesn't mean you're not successful. It just means you lost this one and go win the next one. Don't lose two in a row. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. And that to me is why I love being in the ACC and why I love that challenge of recruiting and playing against the top schools in the country. I absolutely love it and I love beating them because, you know, it's such a challenge and you just have to be a competitor if you're going to play at the Power Four level.
Yeah, no, I love it. We used to always tell players, my job is to out-recruit you. Your job is to make sure that I cannot out-recruit you.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. Yep. If you want to stay on the field, you got to earn your spot every year. And we always tell that to our players, you know, it's we're you got to earn your spot every year. Every year it's just the way it is, you know. Obviously, if you've built up, you know, a couple years of playing really well and maybe your third year you're just having a slow start to the season, then you've built up enough grace, but at some point that grace period is going to die off if you're not performing and we're going to put somebody else in. And so will every other Power Four coach in the country because the stakes are now a lot higher, the pressure is a lot higher, and for some reason, you know, colleges all want to, you know, think we have to win national championships now to be successful, and but that's just the way it is. And again, it's adapt or figure it out.
How has the 28 player roster cap affected you guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, when it was first announced, it really affected us, and you know. We had a roster of 38 players after the 2023 season. And that was right. And then after the 2023 season is when it was announced. And, you know, we had a lot of players because we were in the Sweet 16, we were in the Elite Eight, and girls wanted to stay involved in the program. And then this was announced and it broke our heart because it's like, great, now we have to cut these kids because we had, you know, in 2025, I think we had another big class of eight kids coming in, and we had to decommit some of those kids even too. And that it really broke our hearts because it's not what you want to do to these kids. You want to give every kid a fair chance to prove themselves. And again, it's just such a hard thing to do. So when you're at 38 players and and you have to get down to 28. Simple math will tell you, well, you got to cut 10 players. And, luckily we all found them good homes and they're all playing pretty significant minutes at other Division I schools, which is what we wanted for them. And we're extremely happy for them that, it's unfortunate it didn't work out for them at Pitt, but we got them to great homes, and now they're impacting a lot of other programs, and that's what we love to see. But yeah, it impacted us at first. But now it's just a matter of, okay, well, recruiting is just going to change a little bit different now. You're not bringing in seven, eight kids, six or seven kids. You might bring in three or four kids, maybe two to three even, and then wait to see what the transfer portal has too. Because again, we were just talking about it, but it's every year it seems that the portal is loaded with either good Power Four players or extremely good mid-major players. And I think what's going to happen is a lot of coaches are going to hold off on, for example, the 2028 class and say, hey, I'm only going to commit three of my top kids, and then I'm going to wait to see what I need after these next couple of years, because 2 years out of recruiting is such a long time. Like, your program can go through so many changes in 2 years. So that 28 player roster, I think, makes it a lot. It's going to force kids, high school kids, to be a lot more patient, I think, on trying to really figure out where they need to go, because I think a lot of you're going to talk to a lot of Power Four schools at first, and they might commit kids that they feel are better fits for them right now. And you might just have to wait, but those same schools could still come calling to your senior year, because, oh, well, I'm losing a midfielder off the on the portal that I didn't expect to lose, and now I need you, right? And that's great to me, because now it gives that kid another 2 years to actually just focus on themselves, worry about developing, let the cards
Love it.
how they fall, and then they're actually committing at a normal timeline, around November, December of their senior year, when they're 17, 18, they've grown a little bit more, they've matured, they figured out what's important to them. And they can be patient. And now you're not as scared to ask coaches all the hard questions like you might be on June 15th. And I think you'll start to see a lot of those high school kids finding better fits for them coming out of college, and hopefully start to decrease the number of the transfer portal. I think you're always going to have kids trying to transfer to the ne next level. I think that's going to be inevitable, but at least this way, coaches can then too, we can start being a little bit more specific and intricate about which kids we really need to bring in and commit early, and then go get whatever else we need in 28. Because, and I'll say it like this, and Darren does a great job at Vanderbilt, and they beat Florida State in the tournament, and all of a sudden, they got a lot of the top transfers off that next portal window. And does that happen if they don't beat Florida State? I don't know, right? Maybe not. But I think you could probably say that played a huge role in getting kids there. And so it's like that portal's so last minute that coaches are going to be a little bit weary of, oh, I don't want to commit seven kids now and have two good seasons, and now this Big Ten player wants to come transfer to an ACC school, right? It's going to be a lot different. So I think coaches are going to start to be a little bit more patient in who they recruit and who they commit, because the portal is always going to be there. And yeah, and that's what I think is going to be good about the transfer portal and recruiting moving forward, is kids are going to have to be a little bit more patient.
I love that people are going to hear you talk about this, because I scream this all day long publicly on social media, and I talk to players and families about this constantly, that this is a timing thing. Getting recruited to the highest level possible, whatever that is, if that's what your goal is, it is timing. I mean, you can get in front of coaches too early. And then you're not quite ready, and then they know your name, they've made up their mind about you. Then you try to come back to them later, and it's like, well, I've already seen you. Look, I'm trying to recruit these other kids now, and so it's a thanks but no thanks. Where if you'd just been a little more patient, taken your development seriously, get in front of them at the right moment at the right time, then maybe it is a yes to you. So I think timing is everything.
It'll be everything.
And it bothers me, Jesse, that a lot of girls, but a lot of guys too,
Sure.
not just girls, their attitude is, I just want recruiting over with. I just want to commit as fast as I can. I want it over with. It's too stressful. And my answer is, look, enjoy the ride. Recruiting is part of the ride. Just relax and play your very best. And certainly if you're in the platforms, right? If you're playing in the ECNL or possibly and even the GA, but even if you're not, if you're a top level player and you get in front of the right coach at the right moment at the right time,
Yeah.
There'll be a serious consideration of you.
100%. 100. Yeah. This is my prediction is I think that those top, 60 some kids will probably go early, early in fall of after June 15th. Hopefully not as early as we saw in the 27 class, but it's still early because, those are the kids that you can, pretty much be sure that they're going to come impact you day one. But then that second wave of kids, that to me, that's your golden time because you can just worry about development. You can start to talk to coaches a little bit more and stay, just not really be rushed. And again, just develop and wait till they see you at the right, wait till they see you in your senior year. And after they lose a couple kids and here's the other thing too. It's like a lot of coaches, we don't really know how kids are going to pan out too. So it's, if I'm looking at the 2028 class and I'm looking at, for example, let's say the forward in 2026, let's say we have, nine forwards on our roster. So it's like, okay, we don't really need a forward for 28. Well, we get to 2026 and let's say three of those kids that we thought were gonna be good didn't work out for us. And then one kid's graduating and this kid's leaving. It's like, oh, well now we're down to four forwards and we really need a forward. Here you go. Let me go watch you again. Okay, you can help us. And now you're getting the offer that you always wanted. It's just going to come a little bit later. So that's the way I see it. But I'm curious to see if it does work out that way, because again, transfer portal is going to be crazy and but it'll be unique. But I think at least this way we can start to kind of be a little bit more patient and not force kids to make decisions so early and kind of let kids know that hey,
I think that's the main thing. Look, I hated the, oh, I don't know. Everybody always called it the Anson Dorrance rule, because North Carolina was committing 13-year-olds, back in the day, and I completely hated that.
I
It's a
see.
little better now, June 15th, but I don't know.
I still think it's
Just
way too
started
early.
driving. You've just started
Oh,
probably
listen.
dating. You've just started getting your first jobs.
Yeah.
You
Oh.
don't even know what you want out of life yet, and then we're asking you to commit to something that takes you into 22, 23 years old, and we're asking you to do that at 15. I just think it's so unfair to kids. I don't like it. So many other things can change.
It's I
And coaches can quit, by the way, and then you got to start all over again. How many
yeah
seniors before signing day now are going to have to restart their process before signing day because a new coach comes in and says, "I don't know you. I recruited these kids at my old school. Those are the ones that I'm bringing in, not you." And you got to start out. I think it's more disadvantageous to the player, this early commitment thing, than it is to a coaching staff who has this list of hundreds of players that they're looking at. They can always move around.
Yeah, it's actually my least favorite part of the job of how early that we almost have to talk to these kids. I just think it's not right. And you just think about human development. Just think about the brain. Like your brain doesn't develop until your mid-20s. And now you're
Right.
asking 16-year-olds to make such a life-changing decision. And sure, some kids, it works out for a lot of the kids, but it doesn't work out for a lot of them too. And it's like just I don't know. To me, I'd rather give them another year to figure out who they are as a person and what they're looking for and know that they don't have to feel pressured by anybody and to commit. And it's just fascinating to me. That's my least favorite part about the job is because we're a staff that we don't like to put any pressure on kids. It's we actually encourage all of our kids that come on visits to go take all of their visits. Because
I love it.
who are we to say like, hey, you can't go visit that school. That's not right. That's not right for us. And we'll say, hey, okay, how many more visits do you have? Two, great, go take them. Let us know. Come back to us. And once you've seen everything, and that way we know like, hey, we're actually the right fit. And that's why, I'm gonna knock on wood here, but we haven't really lost a lot of kids aside from the 1 year when we had to cut all the kids, right? We haven't really look at our tracker. We haven't lost a lot of really significant players because we make sure that hey, come to Pitt once you've seen everything and you want to come to Pitt. Of course we lose a couple kids every year and that want to go play more like we talked about at lower Division One schools, but thankfully we haven't lost any starters, anybody like any significant minute players to the portal because we truly feel that hey, we've given them enough time to decide that they want to come to Pitt and that's worked out for us. For the most part.
No, I tell you what, I love it. And I learned that lesson many years ago. Mark Kerkorian at Florida State, the first year that they won their first national championship. He had been recruiting one of my junior college girls, and came and visited her, and he said the same thing. He asked what other schools are you visiting, and we listed them off, UCLA and North Carolina. He goes, good, go visit them all. I want you to visit them all. That way you will know that when you choose Florida State, it was your best choice. And I thought, oh, what a great way to put it. It's a
100%.
confident way, but at the same time, it's the same, but the Kirkorians of the world and the Waldrums of the world and the Dorrances of the world, the top level coaches, they know what they have is special. And they know that the right kids are going to come. And they also know that this school is not right for everybody, and we're not right for everybody. We want everybody to be happy. And a happy player and a happy staff leads to more wins.
And that's what we always tell kids. We'll sit them down in our office. We'll give them their offer, and that's the other thing. We also don't really make offers until we have them on campus as well, because again, what's that offer is meaningless if you're not even interested in us. So we because this t when you come to campus, it tells us that you actually want to explore coming to Pitt. So we won't give them the offer until they come on the visit, and then and during that, we'll say, you know what, if you commit to Pitt today, that's going to be a great thing for Pitt. We just got better with your commitment, but at the same time, we want you to commit, or we need it to be a good Jesse decision for you. So if it doesn't feel right now, then don't do it, and then come back to us. So it again, it's always about the kid. It should always be about the kid, right? Not about what you want as a coach. And the way I like to say it too is, if a coach gives you an offer and gives you a really hard deadline within a week, they're looking out for themselves, not for you. So I would always be wary of those coaches.
Boy, I'm really glad you brought that up, and I want parents to and kids to really hear that hard, because I feel the same way. I think it's a sign of insecurity, of a coaching staff. And believe me, the worst coaches to play for as a player's play, as a player is an insecure coach, because everything's going to end up being your fault. Nothing's going to end up being their fault, and it's a tough coaches to play for.
It is. And that just, I mean, that right there to me, I know coaches do it, and I'm sorry, but I think that's a huge red flag, because it's not right, in my opinion.
No, I would agree with you. It's and again, it's just our opinion, but I'm sure there's an argument for the other side of it. And there are look, and then there are certain times of the year where, if you have a let's say you have a top level transfer go out in the May window, right?
That
You
yeah.
don't have much time to move. And if I'm talking to
100%.
a player, it's like, I got three players that I'm going after. You're my number one, but I got to know in 2 days because I
100%.
got offered the number because somebody's going to snatch up these three. So there are certain times of the year and certain circumstances where you must put the pressure on. And it's not because you want to. It's like, look, we've got housing to deal with, and we've got to move you in here, and we've got to get your classes. And there's a lot of things to do here. So, not to say every situation
Sure,
of that
100%.
pressure, but we're talking about normal recruiting timelines, juniors,
And we do that with kids too. And
early seniors, that thing.
And we will say, like, hey, here's your offer. If they're our number one, we'll say, hey, take your time. You're our number one choice, but know that at some point, and we'll at least give them 2 weeks. We'll say at least 2 weeks. We'll say we might come back to you and say, hey, we kind of need a decision soon, because you're our number one, but there's the number two here, and we can't lose both of you, right? That then it's not good for our program, and then we kind of feel like, okay, well, you can't be dragging us along either, because 2 weeks we feel is probably like the bare minimum that should be given to make that decision. So that'd be the only ever deadline or hard deadline that we give you, is like, hey, we can't lose both of you, so, but we want you, so you better commit. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
No, 100%. No, I want parents to hear both sides of it and the players to hear both sides of it, because it is, there's a difference between that high pressure sales technique and also the reality of running a business and running our team. And we've got to keep both sides in mind.
For sure, for sure.
All right, brother. So tell us, have you got, do you want to tease any guests coming up on the podcast?
I haven't even started lining any guests up.
Okay. All right.
I wish I could, but that's my project, essentially.
All right.
All of these next couple of weeks is start to line up some guests and start recording some episodes,
I
and
love
hopefully
it.
by early May, kind of like May 1-ish, get just drop a handful of episodes for people to listen to. But
For sure.
it'll be all different types of coaches and leaders. I'm very fascinated in just learning more about them and their path and how they coach their teams and what works for them. And selfishly, it helps me. It's a way for me to help hone my game while it also
Sure.
it gives a platform for all these great coaches to be able to share their knowledge with the rest of the people that listen.
Well, you've got a great last name. Honestly, that's what hit the first time I thought, oh, goal line podcast. Oh, goal. Oh, yeah, he spelled it differently.
That's
Last
right.
name's
That's right.
great last name that works out great for being a
Yeah,
goalkeeper.
exactly. Yeah, I'm pretty lucky in that sense. I got the good play on words going.
And then, so then one more time, how do people get a hold of you? And what other projects do you have going that you'd like people to know about?
I'm gonna shout out Cedric K. If you're a goalkeeper, check us out. I think we've got the best gloves in the country. We sponsor especially NWSL pros like Jordan Silkowitz and Leah Freeman, Laura Ivory, John McCarthy is one of our pros, Jaden Hibbert in the MLS. So we're a growing brand. We're the most interconnected goalkeeping brand that we like to call ourselves. So definitely check us out there. And then if you want to reach me, just shout me out on Twitter, Jesse_Goldman. Happy to answer anything there.
All right, brother. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And hey, anytime you ever want to come back on again, you're more than welcome.
Great. Thank you, Don. Appreciate it.
All right, Jesse.